Well, hello everyone. I'm here once again with Todd Lewis. In some ways, following on from the last discussion we had about men without mastery, today we're coming back to the trad question, which is something I've discussed recently with controversial guest Blam Blas, who had, let's just say, divided opinion. But he wanted to talk about traditionalism as a useless LARP. That's what he called it. He was coming from the point of view of political realism and political organization. Todd has a slightly different view. In fact, when he suggested this video, he wanted to call it Trad as Zionist Slop, or, you know, Trad is a form of Zionist slop. I have to say, I've kind of got an idea what he means, but also I'm not quite sure what he means. And I told him I probably can't call the video that, Todd. But before we get going, where can people find you, Todd?
You can find me at POF Podcast on X, and you can find me on Praise of Phi Podcast on YouTube.
And I have to remind people, it's still January sale all the way up to the 31st. Promo code SHORJAN gets you 25% off all courses. If you wanted to do the Trivium, Foundations of Economics, Foundations of Shakespeare, all of the different courses, it's 25% off with promo code SHORJAN. And as I keep on mentioning, if you send the receipts of Foundations of Shakespeare to the publishers, they will give you the book, because it's designed as a book course, for 50% of the total retail price. Okay, now I cannot wait to get into this topic, because I have a deep interest in traditionalism and in what is known as trad. You want to say that trad is a form of Zionist slop. Before we get to that, I think it's worth building up a taxonomy of trad, okay? In my view, Todd, there are actually three different forms of trad. When people talk about trad, there are four. If I just remember, there's a fourth one, okay? So the four different types of trad are basically the trad cath, I guess you'd call it, which is your kind of conservative family guy, you know, the wife guy, have a wife, grill, have kids, this is the dream, you know. There is the kind of crusader LARP trad, where it's, you know, Deus Vault and the crusade, you know, the helmet and the Red Cross and all the rest of it, those aesthetics, and basically saying, well, yeah, I'm a kind of muscular Christian who wants to recreate Crusade, something like this. Third one, I would say, is the kind of Avolian, René Guénon, perennial traditionalism, okay, capital T tradition, which means something quite, you know, that's quite different from the first two there. And then the fourth one that I just remembered, I guess, is your pagan type who wants to recreate, I don't know, worship of Odin, or who wants to recreate, you know, in this country we have, he's a mate of mine, Tom Rousel, Survived the Jive. He wants to recreate pre-Christian, indigenous, British pagan festivals and traditions and things like that and keep them alive. You know, it takes different forms in different places, as you can imagine. Those are, would you agree that with my taxonomy, those are the four predominant types of trad you'll find online? And when you suggested this, I can't imagine that you mean all four of them. You only mean like one or two of them. So I'll hand over.
Yeah, no, that's a pretty, I would agree with that taxonomy. I'm primarily speaking about number two on the list, and a little bit of number one. Yeah, if you're like a capital P perennialist or pagan, like three and four, no, that's not you. I'm not talking about you today. I'm talking about primarily number two, the Deus Vult Crusader types. And then sometimes, again, with like the trad is dad, if you will, right? The trad cat. They also fall into this, though it's not necessarily their sole focus. So that's what I'm talking about here. So what do I mean by this? Well, let's look at the problem. The problem that these guys often point to, and then with their memes sort of amplify, is especially in Europe, but to a lesser degree in the United States, there is, you know, the immigration question, but then also the immigration question with regards to Islamic immigrants. And they're like, well, you know, no, this is Tours all over again. This is Vienna all over again. This is Constantinople all over again. We were going to have to fight the Moors right here in the heart of Europe. Now, the problem is this couches the entire problem in a way that is meant to not solve it. What do I mean by that? Well, the first thing is, what is the source of the Islamic migration into Europe? There are two causes. Very easy to tell. First one is French and U.S. imperialism. So with the Arab Spring in 2011, which hit Syria, and then the broader Franco-NATO attack on Gaddafi in Libya, you removed two stable countries in the region that were soaking up the refugees from other conflicts. So in Iraq in 2003, after the U.S. invasion, many people fled to Syria, because Syria was a stable country. In fact, many Christians fled to Syria because the Islamists in Iraq at this point, unlike Saddam, were probably going to kill the Christians. And then the Sahel, so Mali, for example, had an insurgency there where they were fighting Al-Qaeda. Now, in other conflicts in that region, people went to Libya because Gaddafi represented a stable regime. When Gaddafi was removed and the Arab Spring hit Syria, where'd they all go? They went to Italy. Those people went to Italy, and then there's the corridor. They go up into Europe, Germany, France, Britain. And now all of these countries in Europe after 20.
Sorry to interrupt, Todd, as well. I think the Libyan immigration, the ones that went through that route, actually also led to quite a large influx of black African immigration into Europe as well, into Italy, into France. But I'll let you carry on.
Right. Okay, so that's the mechanism. That's how they got here. They themselves, see, by keeping West Africa, North Africa, and the Middle East in a constant boiling pot, you have this, for lack of a better word, biomass that you can channel and throw in different places. Now, Syria and Libya represented stoppers, like thinking a bathtub, and they weren't going through, but then they went through. Second reason. Capitalism drives down the cost of labor, right? Okay, so you have all these foreigners, Arabs, blacks, Muslims. What does that do? Well, it raises the unit action cost of labor organizing. As Engels said, all these diverse peoples don't speak the same language, don't even have the same religion. That's going to make it hard for them to organize. Also, supply and demand. The supply of labor goes up, cost of labor goes down. Those are the two reasons why you have, you know, black Africans from Mali in France. Now, the trad perspective totally misses this and, in fact, completely obfuscates this. And what do they want? What do they advocate? Military intervention in the Middle East, the very thing that brought these people over here in the first place. So you're literally advocating for policies that will actually give you more of what you say you don't want. And, of course, you know, it's our greatest ally in the Middle East that's leading to all of these wars. And that's why I call the trad a Zionist slop.
Now, are the people who are doing this aware that they're doing it? Or do you think it's just a kind of trap or a psyop or something, you know, like how complicit, how deliberate is this as a misdirection in your view? Or are these people just like misguided?
I would say almost all of them are misguided. Where this comes from is Moldbug. He does two things. He brings up the old reactionary anti-Protestant pro-Catholic arguments in his UR blog. And then he sort of recrystallizes that in the terms the super Protestant, which, you know, was an admitted blind to get people to look away from the dark elves, because Kevin McDonald was asking too many questions, so we had to come up with a new threat, right? So he reseeds these concepts into the consciousness of dissident right-wing men. And now, you know, beyond that point, I don't think Moldbug is really active. It's just that he seeds it. It's there. It's a latent potential that these men now can take on in this deterritorialized soup of historical tidbits.
Now, whenever I have talked around, or whenever anybody starts talking in these terms, Todd, I can guarantee you there'll be many, many people in the comments saying, well, the thing is, Islam is a threat. you know, there are all these Muslims there. What do you want to do? Just lie down? If we don't do something, it will become like Hulbeck's submission or something like this. What's your response to those sorts of arguments? And this is a very identifiable type. I mean, it started happening in America now. There's this Latino woman called, is it Valencia Gomez or Valentina Gomez, who is, I mean, you know, she's a very, very fiery, hardcore, anti-Islamist in her rhetoric, very Christian, trying to recreate, you know, I mean, because she's Latin, because she's a Latino, it's like the spirit of the conquistadors, only like you're also a crusader or something. But you understand what I mean, right? So this is like this rhetoric is entering American politics as well. There was a big upshot in it around Mamdani, but then from the flip side, it's like, well, yeah, but Mamdani is actually also the mayor of New York now. So has New York fallen, etc. Discuss.
Right. So again, the question is, the Islamic individuals that are currently living in the West, whether it's Europe or the United States, how did they get here? Right. Because if you look at, say, from the Battle of Tours up until, I don't know, 1683 Vienna, these are independent Islamic states led by generals or emperors or sultans leading armies to invade Europe. None of these people got here without the will or permission of the governments of the European countries and US and Canada who brought them here. So it's completely unrelated. This is a completely unhelpful way to frame this question. These people who are like Mamdani, for example, it's even worse in the United States because, you know, these were not just people that were refugees from Syria and Libya and beyond. These were people that were intentionally brought here to reduce the cost of labor, to disrupt U.S. labor organizing and raise the profits of capital. Ultimately, this engine of capital that Marx talks about in his preface to the Russian translation of the Communist Manifesto says that this is the engine. These people that get picked up from all over the world and get dropped off in Europe or America, they don't come here on their own. They don't join the Great Khan's horde and ride across Eurasia and show up at your doorstep in Poland. These are people that have to travel across the sea. They didn't build a reed boat, like Thor Heyerdahl did. There's NGOs that are working with corporations to shuttle and transport all of these people around. For what purpose? I mean, depending on which part of the supply chain you're in, people have different motives. But the ultimate reason why this supply chain exists is to reduce the cost of labor. Now, the fact that there was an uptick after 2011 in Europe of these migrants is precisely because of military interventions in Libya and Syria. So even if you take that tack and say we need to have a harder hand and then attack them more, you're just going to create more refugees that are going to come into Europe. You're literally advocating for the very mechanism that is the source of this problem.
One of the things that interests me is why the Crusades continue to have such a great purchase on the imagination. Because, I mean, okay, you had these back and forth wars between, you know, Saracens and Christians and Crusader knights and so on and so forth. But from what I can see, the upshot is that they lost. Right. I mean, the upshot is that Constantinople was overthrown by Mehmed II in 1453, and they took Turkey, and it remains, you know, Constantinople is now Istanbul, and, you know, they won. Jihad won against the Crusades. I mean, well, I remember I said that on Twitter before, and it led to an interesting back and forth and so on, but I mean, okay, it took a while. You know, these were long and protracted wars, but why do you think that the Crusades are so powerful in the imagination? I mean, I have a book by Hilaire Belloc called The Crusades, which I read with great interest. I've got numerous books on the Crusades here, somewhere, I'm well acquainted with the topic, and I know that there were several different Crusades and there were slightly different outcomes each time. But to me, when I look at the, like, what's the actual upshot? What's the, this is kind of the results driven Machiavellian in me. I'm like, well, what I see is that the Christians were driven out and the Islam took over those areas. So that's what I wonder. Why is it so kept alive? Why does it have such memetic value? Why does it have such symbolic value? What is the importance of the Crusades?
Well, in our current time, right, the reason why the Crusades have purchase is because of the sort of, even pre-computer, right, we have TV and radio, the memetic warfare that was going on, first with Christians and atheists. So the atheists drudge this up in order to say, oh, Christians, you know, despite the fact that, of course, Orthodox and Protestants weren't doing the Crusades, it's just Catholics, but it's somehow to stain on all Christians, you know, convert by the sword and all that, right? And then you got the shitlibs who bring it up as a critique of U.S. imperialism during the global war on terror, even though, of course, the Crusades really weren't a kind of imperialist venture like that. It wasn't like the Holy Roman Empire decided to, you know, colonize the Middle East. That would have been the equivalent comparison in the Middle Ages. And then on the right, you have, of course, Catholics who want to then defend that sore spot in their history because it's a pressure point that everybody pushes, right? So you just get used to defending it, even if you look silly doing it. And then the other thing is, this is a big problem the right has. They take the frame that the left gives and says, yes, that's good. I like this thing that you call bad, whether it's good or bad or not. And they're just going to like reflexively defend the Crusades because it's owning the libs. And it's like, well, that's probably what most of these people are, to be honest. And maybe a handful of Catholics who are just tired of having that, you know, using that as a bludgeon in the other direction. But it's mostly, I think, just to own the libs, because the sort of like shitlib reading of the Crusades is like some sort of like Western neocolonialism was complete garbage, but it was hugely popular in the global war on terror. And it was a bludgeon against all conservatives, all right-wing people. And so it's sort of like, well, I guess I am. Yeah. Okay, sure. Cool. Deus vult, right? And it's a very, you know, low information response, but I think that's what's causing it.
Yeah. I mean, my understanding is that the Crusades, I mean, if you actually look at the historical Crusades, it wasn't like all Europeans going there, and it wasn't necessarily like nation states going there. It was a kind of, I hesitate to use the phrase ragtag coalition, but it kind of was, wasn't it? It was kind of like, you know, these unusual warrior knights who had their own orders, who went over, volunteers of various different kinds, people who were motivated to go for religious reasons. And to me, it looked, I mean, this is an awful comparison in a way, but do you remember when like people went to fight in the Spanish Civil War, and people went from all over to fight either on the nationalist side or on the other side? To me, like, it's kind of more like that than anything else. It's kind of not like America invading Iraq, which was one nation state attacking another nation state. It was more like, I struggle to think of other examples. There of course was the Reddit battalion in Ukraine, where people were volunteering to fight the Ukrainians, right? But that was even more farcical. But is that true? Is that right? Or have I kind of, as a shorthand, is that?
Well, if we use modern examples, the Spanish Civil War is close, but I think the better one would be Afghanistan in the 80s, where you have Muslims from all over the world coming to join the Mujahideen to fight the Soviets. And that was later repeated in the Balkan Wars in the 90s. And so you have these religiously motivated fighters from all over the Islamic world, right? Now, in the case of the Crusades, it's all over the Catholic West, coming to serve, to defend some part of territory that is considered important. Now, in this case, not just important, but holy. And that's a motivation that's just not present with the global war on terror. And ultimately, whether it's the atheists or the shitlibs or the general right wing or the Catholic today, the way that the Crusade memes are used, it's not born out of an understanding of the Crusades itself or our current situation with these Islamic immigrants. These are masks that people are wearing to conceptualize or express something completely unrelated to the Crusades. They're being shoehorned into this as a way to mask true intentions at worst, and I guess at best, clumsily trying to articulate your own concerns the best way you can.
But I mean, just to try to decode what's going on a second, the Crusades, correct me if I'm wrong, were basically intended to liberate the Holy Land or conquer, take the Holy Land back to Christendom from the heathen, something like this. Whereas I'd imagine that the vast majority of people who have Crusader avatar or who lean into this sort of aesthetic, they've got in mind something closer to, the Reconquista in Spain, where, you know, Spain had been under Arab rule and then they were driven out. So I think that's what they would say. They've had in mind, actually, their target is less, the Middle East and more London or Birmingham or Paris or Detroit or wherever it is that there's a large concentration, of Muslim community.
Right. Fight them here because they are here. Well, that to me, okay, let's use the Reconquista, right? The Reconquista took place over 700 years with Catholic Spanish kingdoms fighting back against the Moors, who in 711 invaded Spain and conquered almost all of Iberia, except for a thin strip in the north. Now, the question is, again, how did they get here? The people that the Muslims here that are the concern of these individuals did not come here as a result of a victorious army. In fact, furthermore, there are no independent Islamic states or rulers in the West like there were in Spain with the Taifas. There are none. It's a complete mismatch. And again, they're here.
I hate to embody the slop frame here, right? They would say, but Sadiq Khan in London, he rules London as a colonizer, they'd say. Mamdani in New York. And also our home secretary in this country is a woman called Shabana Mahmood. And, you know, it depends on how far you go on the British slop right, but you'll hear rhetoric like this, that, you know, these people are here they are actually here as kind of conquerors. And, you know, him being mayor of London or something is like that. How would you respond to those sorts of comebacks? Because I know that somebody in the comments will say it. That's why I'm saying it.
Well, they're a lot more like this. So the great Frederick Barbarossa II, the wonder of the world, the Stupor Mundi, he had a mercenaries from the Islamic world who were archers who fought in his army. And that was considered really bad taste in medieval Europe at the time. They're like, why are you hiring Muslim soldiers to fight fellow Christians? Because he fought a lot of Italian city-states, such as the Lombard League in Italy. And it's like, well, look, it may be bad optics, it may be in bad taste, but that's not the sign of total Islamic conquest. That's just, you know, your prince, your emperor here, you know, picking up on merit, right? We talk about meritocracy. You got to have your best soldiers, right? Your best everything. So you just hire some of these guys to do the job for them. Now, in the case of, you know, this isn't the archer corps of Frederick Barbarossa. These guys do what they're told. They do what they're told, right? So you to use an American term, these would be the house Negroes. These would be these Islamic individuals that run these cities in the name of neoliberalism. They're basically house Negroes. That's all they are. They're not the vanguard of, like, you know, Mehmed II. You know, they're there because they do what they're told. They're not going to ask questions. And again, the way that all these people got here is they came in as immigrants because capital wanted cheap labor. Okay, that's the reason why they're here. And the way to get them to go back home or to prevent any more from coming is to address the issue at that level.
So, I'm just trying to do my best to play devil's advocate here, Todd, so that these conversations aren't just me and you going, I agree. Right. So I'm trying to do my best to steel man the other side. When I was listening to LBC the other day, Sadiq Khan was on. And, you know, there's been quite a ramp up in anti-immigration rhetoric in the country. There are people, you know, screaming things like re-migration now, and, you know, talk has come back, we just want them to go home. just want them to go home, okay? And Sadiq Khan, who is the mayor of London, you're right, he is a shitlib. He is a massive shitlib. He's very pro-pride. He's very, like, women's rights and all this. He is a classic neoliberal figure. But he is also a Muslim, and in the past, he has represented the Muslim Brotherhood as a lawyer and things like that. But anyway, he was on this call-in show, and he was saying, like, some of the rhetoric we're hearing is terrifying, and we fear for the safety of the, you know, various migrant communities. But let the message be clear to all of you listening today that we're not going to go home because our home is here. Our home is here, he said. And I thought, people listening to, there will be people listening to that who think, our home is here. We're not going anywhere because we belong here and this is our home, says Sadiq Khan, the Muslim mayor of London. And there will be a certain type of person whose lizard brain is going, he's starting to sound like a conqueror to me, right? How would you respond to this? Like, I'm just trying to steel man the other view. I'm trying to think of, like, if Connor Tomlinson was here, something like that, he'd be coming up with lines like this. So what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of that is, I think, just talk. It's just big talk. I mean, because let's be clear, right? I mean, you can't really be an Islamic radical and pro-feminism, pro-gay, pro-trans. No. How would the Taliban or Hamas deal with that? We know. The fact that he has these liberal positions proves he's a house Negro. He's not actually, you know, the conquering, you know, son of Mehmed II. I mean, he's just not. It's talk. And I think partly the reason why you get talk like this is because you do sense the temperature in the room, that you're unwelcome, that people are getting upset, you know, especially with continued talk about the grooming gangs, right? The Pakistani grooming gangs. And him doing nothing about it, and have the British government doing very little about it. And so I think this is a way of signaling that, oh, hey, you know, these things are getting hot. And I think the intended audience for that comment is the leadership of Labour, right? Because he's basically saying, look, you know, we're not going anywhere. He's trying to sound confident, but what he's signaling to his Labour handlers is that, oh, hey, it's getting really hot for us over here. People don't like us here. You know, do something. But he can't say that because it sounds weak.
Mm-hmm. No, and that's true. That it is true, because it's funny you said that. The framing in that whole conversation is Keir Starmer doing enough to address these concerns? Is Keir Starmer being strong enough as a left-wing leader against these voices of hate? Because, of course, Keir Starmer, playing Tony Blair tactics, has actually been going the other way and is leaning into anti-migrant rhetoric, leaning into, you know, oh, we're getting immigration down and so on and so forth, which is, as bizarre as it sounds, Keir Starmer himself is triggering some aspect of the Libs over here, even though he's the Labour leader. It's kind of weird, right? And he is also not consistent, so he U-turned on a week-to-week basis, so it's complicated. But your read on that is probably correct, that Sadiq Khan is in a way trying to send a message to his fellow elites. This is something that Scrump and Evelyn always say, that 90% of the media are, you know, let's say the Dark Elves talking to each other, or elites just talking to each other. Right, so there's one conversation going on that we think's happening between the normal, you know, the people on the radio and the public, but there's another conversation going on in newspapers, in magazines, in radio shows, in TV, where it's them talking to each other and negotiating, using the media to message to each other, and more of that goes on than is perhaps often recognized. Anything else on this topic, Todd, of Crusade LARP?
Well, I'll just wrap up with one, don't scare the elites if you want to seduce them. And then two, the Trad LARP, the Crusader LARP, all of this obscures why these people were here in the first place. Reasons of U.S. and French intervention through the use of hard power in the Middle East and Africa, and the needs of capital. And they actually then are retrenching themselves in the system, advocating for policies that will not only not solve this problem, but aggravate it.
I mean, if Tommy Robinson was sitting here instead of me, his actual view is, look, the problem with the Muslim community in particular is that they don't integrate. They do not follow the same codes and laws of the rest of British society. Okay? You can have Indian people come over here and they learn how to make a cup of tea and they have fish and chips and they wear the same clothes and they make a real effort to integrate into British public life, and they're not a problem. Same with the Sikh, same with the Hindus, the Sikhs, they're not a problem. Jews also not a problem, okay, according to Tommy Robinson. They often go on about their black friends, you know, having grown up in Luton and so on. These guys, not a problem. Paul Ince has been the captain of the England football team. Frank Bruno was a boxer here. These guys are as British as me and you, blah, 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 blah. The real issue is Islam, because they're not here to fit in. They don't fit in. Not just the grooming gangs are just the most visible thing. The problem is that they, you know, there's not even an attempt to assimilate for these people. They're here to take over. What's your answer to the Tommies of this world? Because these ultimately are the people who you'll find in his following a lot of the crusader types.
Well, there's another group of people in the UK that doesn't follow the same set of rules that everybody else has to, the bourgeoisie. And they have a very vested interest in this other group of people who don't follow the same rules as England being there. That's what I tell Tommy Robinson.
Interesting. Okay, so we're right back to your Marxist class-based analysis, Todd. Obviously, Tommy is working class, right? With an identifiable working class accent, and he leads lots of people. Like in this theoretical meeting that you have with Tommy, you've told him that. You said, the bourgeois, they play by different rules. And he's like, all right, mate, but what can I do with that? What can I do with that? You know, I can see the mosque being built. What can I do about the bourgeoisie? What would you say to him?
Well, ultimately, you, there's the old adage, two birds with one stone, right? This is, if we view all the different immigrants in the UK as a part of this broader ensemble of labor repression that the bourgeoisie follows, you can't necessarily send them all back at once. That would be unfeasible. This could be the first domino that falls that then allows for the remigration of other immigrants out of Great Britain, which would be, you know, the gut punch that the bourgeoisie does not want to have feel right now.
Tommy doesn't have a problem with the other migrants. They're just as British as me and you, Todd, or whoever.
If we still have one group of people that doesn't follow the rules the rest of Britons do, I don't see how we solve this problem.
Okay. All right. Okay. Fair enough. All right. Well, this should be an interesting one. Can't wait to see the comments. Where can people find you, Todd?
And they can find me at POF Podcast on X, and they can find me on Praise of Fire Podcast on YouTube.
Fantastic. And I'll just remind people, 25% off all courses, academic agency, promo code Shawjan. And I'll see you all again soon. If you like this video, be sure to like and subscribe. You can join the channel for thousands of hours of past shows in the archive and hundreds of videos. If you have any questions, you can leave a super chat or a super thanks, and I'll be sure to pick it up during my weekly office hours, which run every Tuesday afternoon. I also provide courses at the academic agency, which I encourage people to buy. Thousands of students now have taken the Trivium to improve their skills in writing, logic, and rhetoric. Just three of many courses available. Buy it now. But most importantly of all, friends, get out.